We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
But he proceeds to, you know, keep just pounding on the outside corner. LeVon Hernandez, and I'm sure Charles Johnson was like, okay, you know, we're going to set up out here. If you're going to call it, we're going to throw it out here.
It's October 97, Braves at Marlins. This is Remember That Game, the podcast about sporting events that take you on a journey and maybe chart the path of the zeitgeist. I'm your host, Thomas Emmerich, and my guest is Brian Wright. You may have seen his gamers on MLB.com and got some pretty great blurbs on your Mets book, including from Tom Verducci. And your Mets were on the sideline for Game 5 of the NLCS here as your NL East mates in the Braves and recently non-existent Marlins duke it out. Were you thinking, hey, go Marlins, take down the fondant 90s Braves? Because this could be us. This could be the Mets someday soon.
I think if this was 2023 and I was, you know, the age I am now, having watched the Mets for like 30 years without a championship, seeing a team in their fifth season go for a championship, I would be very jaded and very upset. Back in 1997, the Braves, you know, were incredibly annoying, always winning, always beating the Mets. I mean, a lot of teams were beating the Mets, except, you know, 97, they got better. But the Marlins were, despite the fact, and we'll get into this, despite the fact that they were really trying to buy a World Series, still were, in my mind, very likable, mainly because they were going up against the vaunted Braves team that had won, you know, every division, at least that I had seen in the NL East, save for the strike year of 94. So to me, I mean, the Marlins, I was rooting for the Marlins, you know, up through their World Series win. So it's, but if that happened today, as a sports fan without a baseball championship, I would not have the same feeling.
Yeah, the team that Blockbuster built, Wayne Huizenga sold at the right time and put together a contender. We get to the National League Championship Series. We're tied 2-2 in Miami. Turner Field in Atlanta slated for the remainder of the series. The Braves have three Hall of Famers ready if this goes seven in Smoltz, Glavine. And starting here in Game 5, Greg Maddux. Kenny Lofton leads off with a triple. And then first and third for the heart of the order, maybe the best in baseball, 8-97. Chipper Jones, Fred McGriff, Ryan Klesko. Marlins starting a rookie who lost three straight to end the regular season because their ace fell ill and their number two Blues rotator cuff just days earlier. Braves minus 200 coming into the series. Huge favorites. Could I offer you even 3-1 odds on the fish at this point?
You know, it's interesting because, you know, during the regular season, the Marlins kind of handled the Braves. And, you know, the Marlins were obviously in contention for the playoffs. It was pretty much the Braves division most of the way. I don't really remember how close it got. But the Marlins, for as far as I remember down the stretch, it was never that close. I mean, there were a couple teams within a few games. So, the Marlins had handled the Braves, but you really, I don't think you would have thought, oh, that's, you know, this will be the same thing in the playoffs. But they had Gary Sheffield. They had acquired Moises Alou, who had been with the Expos. They had Bobby Bonilla, who had been with the Mets, but before that, the Pirates, and made several postseasons. Alex Fernandez, who you mentioned, tore the rotator cuff. He was previously with the White Sox. And Kevin Brown, who had been with the Marlins, but he was, you know, their ace pitcher who fell ill. I don't think you would have said, you know, I don't think you could convince anyone like, oh, now the Marlins are going to figure it out. Especially because, you know, when you get to the playoffs, it's usually the pitching that prevails. And no team had better pitching than the Atlanta Braves in the 90s with Maddox. Maddox came in and they had John Smoltz, who was there really from their ascension. Tom Glavine as well. Great starting rotation in the playoffs. And the year before, they made the World Series. They lost the Yankees. The year before that, they win the World Series. So I don't think there was this feeling, despite, you know, 91, 92, 93, the Braves had come up short, whether it was in the World Series or the League Championship Series. There was that feeling that, oh, the Marlins are going to get them, especially when Kevin Brown is ill. And, you know, you thought maybe game six they'll pitch him. But, you know, when you see who's matched up, it would be very hard, both at the beginning of the series and at this point, to think that the Marlins are going to take at least two out of the next three.
To that point in the 90s, Braves had won 4 out of 5 appearances in the NLCS. They lose 3 out of 4 World Series, but in 2 of those, they were underdogs. This would become the most shocking league championship series week of all time, if you quantify it in the eyes of the betting market. Both favorites, the Braves at minus 200 odds, and of course the Orioles at minus 185 go down. Combined minus 385, tops by a mile to that date. Did this feel like a crazier year than normal for underdogs in the championship series at that time?
I think so. I think relatively speaking, it was kind of unusual. I think one thing has to be recognized is that this was just the third year that they had expanded the playoffs. I guess fourth year, but 94, no playoffs because of the strike. But it was the third year that the playoffs had been expanded to the division series and the league championship series. So obviously, if you're going to have more postseason series, you're going to have more opportunities for upset upon upset. So yes, it was, but I mean, this was like, you know, it was unexpected, but it would kind of become more the norm where, you know, the Marlins, a wild card team that advances and wins the World Series. You have years later, the Angels and Giants meeting in the World Series, both as wild cards in 2002. And, you know, up until now, where you have even more expanded postseason and more opportunities for teams that are relatively speaking inferior, getting close to or in the World Series. So I think in 97, this was kind of unexpected. Hard for me to remember the media, you know, griping or, you know, some, you know, people yelling at clouds going, we need to, you know, change the structure of the postseason. I think I love Bob Costas, but I'm sure he was not in favor of I know he did not like the wild card. But, you know, it added excitement and it adds the, you know, ordinary or a fan that may not be interested in the playoffs to be watching for a team like the Marlins to upset the Braves. And I think, you know, it was time to expand the postseason. It was really getting too traditional where, you know, your competing sports like the NFL had wild card rounds. They had wild card teams and they had, you know, I you know it's, you know, one and done, but you had more teams competing for the championship, more teams in contention for the playoffs, where going back to 93, which is the last year that you had two divisions in each league, you had the 104-win Atlanta Braves winning the NL West, as silly as that sounds, over the 103-win San Francisco Giants, and the San Francisco Giants missed the playoffs. So the Braves, of course, lose to the Phillies the next round, but are in the League Championship Series. So to get back to the point, yeah, it was surprising at the time, but I think as we look back, this was going to be what was, I don't want to say expected, but kind of the unexpected nature of the postseason is more and more likely as you have more teams in the postseason and of course more postseason series.
Is there any comparison to the run the Braves were on in the 90s there?
It's hard to say. I mean, the Braves got their World Series and they got it actually, it's going to sound, and they got it over Cleveland who had more wins. I mean, that Cleveland team in 95, they won 100 games in a 144 game schedule. So that I think so they had the best record in baseball. So it was kind of ironic that the Braves championship came when they had the lesser amount of wins. So they got their championship, but in terms of that run from like 91 through let's say 03 or 04, I can't remember when their run ended with the Mets winning the division in 06. But that 15-year run, the only two comparisons I had thinking in sports were the Packers with Aaron Rodgers, where they got a championship with Super Bowl 30-45 or whatever it was against the Steelers. But, you know, they had their times in which they were one seed, your Giants knocked them off. They had other chances, you know, NFC championships. They got to the game in Seattle that they blew in 2014. So they had their moments to get back to the Super Bowl, to win the Super Bowl. They never really did, but they were always there. And the other comparison, and I don't have the numbers in front of me, but it is one championship, and it's still going, is Calipari's Kentucky men's basketball teams. They won with Anthony Davis in 2012, I think it was. But they had a perfect season up until I think Wisconsin knocked them off in 2015. They've been there often, and they have obviously the turnover of players is a variable here. But those are the two closest comparisons I can make to what the Braves did in that, you know, 90s and 2000 stretch.
Frank Kaminsky, Bobby Bonilla in this case, big seventh inning RBI in what would be a 2-1 game.
Yeah, at that time, Bobby Bonilla was not such a distinct figure in Mets history because he would come to the Mets 2 years later. He was on the playoff team in 99, wound up playing cards with Ricky Henderson in the middle of game six in the clubhouse, as the Mets are, you know, in this back and forth game with the Braves, that they get eliminated. And then the next year he gets released, and that is what kickstarts the Bobby Bonilla day, as everyone notes, with the deferred contract. So the first stint with the Mets, which was from 92 through 95, he was just more disgruntled. He wore earplugs because he got booed too much. Didn't want to hear him. He got into a run-in with reporters. He made all-star teams. I mean, relatively speaking, the Mets were bad. But he made the all-star team in, 93 and 95, I believe. So I mean, two all-star teams. Wasn't as horrible as people might think. I wouldn't, you know, to call him a bust is I wouldn't say he wasn't the biggest bust in Mets history. And in fact, I think the deferred contract is overblown because there are so many. But at that time in 97, I don't think we were like, oh my gosh, Bob Bonilla, look, he's doing this with another team. This is not a good comparison, but like, as we're talking now, the Phillies are trying to make the World Series. Zach Wheeler, who used to pitch for the Mets, is now a terrific pitcher with the Phillies. That's more painful than Bobby Bonilla, to be honest with you. Maybe it's just the jaded nature 25 years down the line. I just like, oh, can someone win a World Series for us? But Bobby Bonilla in 97 to me was not like, I can't believe he's doing this for the Marlins. I also think his attitude was a lot better. Jim Leland was his old manager in Pittsburgh, and I feel like Jim Leland probably found something in him that, you know, made him improved his mood in addition to the fact that they were just a winning team. So, I liked Bobby Bonilla when he was the best because I was a kid and I didn't know any better. So at that time, it was not like it was not cringeworthy to see him doing that and making an impact on the team.
Late 90s, Y2K. A lot of the games I do are around Y2K, but a fascinating time. The Bonilla contract is in part a result of like Mets ownership getting tied up with Madoff.
So it was done before that. Bobby Bonilla's agent was just terrific in terms of that savvy to create a deferred contract. When he was released from the team in 2000. I think because of Madoff, it just really it really got exasperated in the sense of like, oh, they not only are the Mets are losing money, but they're still owing this guy who has been retired. They're still owing him, you know, $1.3 million every year. And in 2015, when the Mets were had this young pitching staff, every young starting pitcher was making less than Bobby Bonilla was annually. So I may not be correct in that, but that's where it gets really amplified. I think, and just the fact that it's the Mets. But you have guys like Chris Davis with the Orioles, who after he had like a 50 plus home run season, signs his deferred contract and is a complete disaster. And the Orioles are paying him, you know, John Angelos, who's a dreadful owner, paying him until 2036. I'm making this, you know, I'm guessing on this. And you had like Bruce Sutter.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And you have Bruce.
Longer than Bonilla.
Well, I think it started later. So Bonilla started in like 2000 and then it just became, and now it's going until. Yeah,
Bonilla's going to 2035, right? It would just be like 1 year longer.
Yeah, it's not as long, but it's definitely a credit to Bonilla's agent. I forget his Gilbert, I believe is his last name, who had this foresight to just be like, let's just spread this money out. And the Mets owners are just really, you know, they were cheap, but the Wilpons were terrible and cheap. So
yeah, they're cheap, and weren't they like, Madoff is going to bring us in all this money down the road, so let's defer it, and then we'll make more with our Madoff money.
Yeah, and I mean the owner Fred Wilpon had a relationship with the Madoff, you know, connections with Bernie Madoff in a sense, and you know that was, you know, a relationship gone bad, very bad, very bad.
The Marlins, on the other hand, yeah, Wayne Huizenga, renter roster. Made his bones with Blockbuster Video, upselling the team and sending off all the players the year after. But Alex Fernandez blowing his rotator cuff in game two. Like, they're still not sure when Kevin Brown's coming back. But Levon Hernandez, a rookie who defected from Cuba, breaks the NLCS record of 15 strikeouts. Here's a call from Bob Costas that gets me amped up. Can you imagine? And this is assuming a lot, but can you imagine if Hernandez beats Maddux today and the Marlins go to Atlanta with Kevin Brown rested and recovered from the intestinal virus and ready to pitch game six with a 3-2 lead? Strike three, his 11th. And the twist, their best hitters were left-handed, and Eric Gregg had a pretty expansive strike zone for left-handed batters.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it was normal for strike zones to be a little bit more generous for left-handed hitters against left-handed hitters as opposed to right-handed hitters. And Greg had an especially generous strike zone. If you can watch the game on YouTube and you can see the pregame conversation between Bob Costas, Bob Uecker, and Joe Morgan. And Costas, I don't know how direct he was with this question, but asked Joe Morgan about Greg's strike zone, and Morgan definitely pointed out that he was a pitcher favorable to pitchers with his zone, and that was really emphasized in this game. And you know, I have read, you know, you read a lot of things about this, like, oh, this Eric Gregg was favoring the Marlins. A couple things, a lot of things should be noted about this strike zone. There was a reputation for the Braves to get a wide strike zone. I'm not saying this wide, but a wide strike zone because they had pitchers like Greg Maddux, Tom Glavine, who utilized the strike zone to their advantage. They would pinpoint pitches on either side of the plate and would kind of expand the zone in the baseball vernacular and get pitches that another pitcher might not normally get. And you could say like, oh, the Braves had this kind of thing coming, but what should also be known is that it was a pretty, if you watch the game, it was fair in the sense that it never changed, and the zone, I should say, and you know, would be more controversial is if Eric Gregg was calling pitches that were outside and then was not calling something that was right on the corner. And when he was just his zone varied, and another thing that is worth mentioning is that, you know, the announcers were saying throughout, I think it was Uecker, who was like, okay, you know, this is like maybe the third inning. Like, okay, now the batters know what to expect. So swing. And now some of these pitches you need like a tree trunk to hit the ball. Fred McGriff, the last pitch to Fred McGriff is, I mean, I'm sorry. I'm, as a guy who doesn't like the Braves, I laugh when I see that pitch because it's hilarious. It would have hit a right-handed hitter. But it could also be said that, you know, it always stayed the same. And if you go back to the first inning, it was really established there. And another point I wanted to make was that Levon Hernandez and his catcher, Charles Johnson, really exploited this to their great credit. Because after, in the first inning, you mentioned the leadoff triple by Kenny Lofton. There was a walk to Keith Lockhart. Then it was Chipper Jones, Fred McGriff, and Ryan Klesko, three lefties coming up. That's when Levon Hernandez started to really live on the outside part. Like he strikes out Chipper Jones. He throws two strikes looking on the outside. That's when the broadcast immediately notes this. They're showing, like, you know, Uecker and Costas are commenting on it. The replay is showing, like, oh my gosh, look where that pitch is. Then the next pitch, Levon Hernandez throws it outside, fouled away. He threw a 1-2 pitch to Chipper Jones outside. Should have been a strike based on Greg's zone. It wasn't called a strike. That was like the one time it was like, wait a minute. And then he gets him on a strike three in the outside corner. But he proceeds to, you know, keep just pounding on the outside corner, Levon Hernandez. And I'm sure Charles Johnson was like, okay, you know, we're going to set up out here. If you're going to call it, we're going to throw it out here. And, you know, whether it was fastball or curveball, he had a really, really sharp break on his curveball. He was using it. It was working. And he got McGriff to strike out. He then got Klesko to strike out. And during those three strikeouts, I think Costas said something to the effect of, if Greg is going to give Levon Hernandez those pitches, Greg Maddux is going to be smiling, noting what Greg Maddux did, what his reputation was in terms of manipulating the strike zone.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
With everyone fighting for attention, how can your business stand out and connect with customers? Easy, with Constant Contact. Constant Contact's award-winning marketplace platform has helped millions of small businesses stand out, stay top of mind, and see big results fast. It's okay if you don't know much about marketing. Constant Contact's writing assistant tools and automation features help you craft messaging and say the right things at the right time. I use this to help write and send my email newsletters, and you should too. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
In the NBC graphic, when Greg Maddux came out to the mound, bottom of the first, it said, great control, works the corners. You know, he loses this one 2-1, four-hitter. In game one, he gives up 5 runs, 0 earned in a loss. You gave a pretty fun NFL comparison.
Yeah, I think that Greg Maddux is kind of like that era's Peyton Manning, where great regular season, very professor-like reputation, which he was, Peyton Manning at quarterback and Maddox on the mound. Maddox was not overpowering. Peyton Manning, when you look at him physically, I mean, do you think he's going to just throw 48 touchdowns in a season and throw for, however many yards he threw for? No. So the postseason is there could have been more. I mean, of course, Peyton had two rings and whatever you want to think about his last one and how much he had to do with it. But Maddox, won the championship with the Braves in 95. Overall was fine in the postseason. I think it gets kind of misconstrued because even in 97 and in the late 90s and early 2000s, we were looking at a pitcher's record in the postseason, wins and losses. And yeah, they were out there for longer, but we were valuing wins and losses, as the weight of gold. And when in fact we should have just been looking at maybe their ERA or others that have more value. So Maddox in the postseason, I think his ERA is 3.1, which by his standards, but it wasn't as bad as maybe seemed and was seemed at that time.
Put their teams in a position to win more in the postseason than they ended up doing. Manning gets them in range against the Steelers to send it to OT, and then the liquored up kicker comes out and slices it. Punishing series here on the other side of the bracket in 97, Mike Mussina with the O's. And Mussina gave up nothing, and still Cleveland advances. But you put together some graphics for social on those, right? You want to plug your graphic accounts? Not graphic content, graphic as in design.
Yeah. I don't know. Well, it depends on if you're a fan of this team.
You're a Rangers fan, yes.
I have a baseball history TikTok and Instagram account. Both are called Retro MLB. The Instagram account has the underscore in between Retro and MLB because of, someone else took it. I did a series of videos on the five teams in this postseason that were without a World Series ring for at least the last 30 years. So Blue Jays, Orioles, Rangers, Twins, and Brewers, if I haven't repeated them. So those five, I did profiles of them. But yeah, the videos are what I was, are kind of what you're getting at. And the Rangers have just been kind of the one that, I think I said in a video, was that they got as close as to winning a World Series as you could possibly get without winning it. Maybe the 86 Red Sox have a case for that too, but it's been a while for the Rangers going back to being in Washington in 1961. And it's interesting looking at it now. Cleveland, we talked about Cleveland and their inability to win it all. It's been since 1948. They're the longest drought. And I think in 97, definitely in the World Series, Bob Costas notes this, and he notes this especially as they get to Game 7, and they're three outs away from winning the World Series. And he, Bob Costas loves to give a history lesson. I love Bob. And he talks about all the players from 1948 and every, he could have recited every player that's played since. And he was setting it up for Cleveland. Here they go. They're going to win their world championship. Maybe there were some people around in 1920. And I'm I don't know if there were, but
yeah, me as a 10-year-old Marlins fan, I didn't care. I was I never heard of those guys. I want the Marlins to win. But now looking back, I'm ooh, that's tough. That's tough for folks in Cleveland.
And especially 2016, with the Cubs, and relatively speaking, they were waiting a fraction of the time compared to the Cubs. And now that we've gotten the Red Sox, the White Sox, the Cubs, I may be missing another team that had a long drought. I mean, Houston had to wait until they're from 62 up until 2017. Now we're getting it to where Cleveland, it's the Rangers, it's the Brewers, and then I think the Padres and the Orioles might be the next. So it's it really hits you as far as when you think about the Orioles and you're like, oh, it hasn't been that long. And you're like, oh, they're the fifth longest drought. You think about Cleveland, they're the longest drought. So it's, I think it took not only its time, but it's also just the fact that all these snake bitten, I guess, so to speak, are just these long drought teams won World Series in the last 20 years.
Yeah, none of these teams got to have a post-championship opening day like the Marlins did in Ken Griffey Baseball 64, came out with the 1998 roster. So Alex Fernandez is the ace pitcher for the defending champ Marlins on Griffey 64. What was your favorite baseball game from back in those days?
So I had Ken Griffey Jr. Baseball back in, when it was on the Super Nintendo, which was like, so the one you mentioned is the like successor. But I had Ken Griffey Jr. Baseball on Super Nintendo. It was like the first real video game I ever had. It was based on the 93 season. And as a Mets fan, I tried to play with the Mets and they were terrible. I mean, the 93 Mets were terrible. So I guess it was a realistic game. But what I remember is they based the names. They didn't have player names. They would base the names off of like the city and specific things that might have represented the city. So for instance, like if you are the Phillies, like they had a guy like, they had like a player like Liberty Bell. Ken Griffey Jr. was the only player who had the rights. You could play with Ken Griffey Jr.
John Kruk was Liberty Bell, or was that Darren Dalton, future Marlin? Who was Liberty Bell, do you think?
Oh, I didn't even know if there was a Liberty Bell. I could look this up and see if like who represented what player. I'm sure there's someone who did a deep dive into this game and was like, oh, that player is so-and-so. Because the physical attributes are pretty, I want to say realistic. But I'm sure like there was some parallel.
Yeah, that's how they skirt around the rights. John Doe is Barry Bonds or whatever they had for him for a while when they couldn't get the rights for him. So yeah, Marlins, the defending champs in call me Junior Baseball for 64. Or they beat Cleveland in 7 games in the World Series. Kevin Brown pitching Game 7 against Cleveland and winning Game 6 against the Braves in the previous series to close that out. The following year, Brown was with the Padres, right? When they knocked off the Braves as minus 400. Some really crazy championship series, though this one in 97. None of the ones previously, you know, dating back to 69 when they started doing it, had as big of a combined favorite odds that both went down in a season. You got minus 385 in 1997. There were 6 other years where both favorites went down. It involves the Mets being a big favorite and going down.
1988.
So the Mets had another one where the AL side also lost as a favorite. And the Mets lost as big favorites.
We're talking about 2006?
Yep.
Yeah, that's fun.
So they ranked number 3. Mets minus 190 and A's minus 115 in 06 adds up to minus 305. The only ones above minus 300 all time are that one. And then here, Braves and O's combined minus 385. And then the top one of all time, minus 410, involves a couple teams that are finishing out the AL and NLCS right now. What is the biggest upset year of all time in the league championship series?
So with that hint, you're referring to 2010.
Yep.
When the Phillies the Giants beat the Phillies. Phillies were big favorites, and then Rangers over the Yankees, which is interesting because I feel like the Rangers had home field, so that's, you know, it's probably Yankee bias there. But I know that the Phillies were big favorites against the Giants.
That 2010 Phillies team takes the cake there, minus 240 favorites. Yankees were minus 170 against the Rangers. How does this 2023 postseason compare as far as shock for you to 97 and any other mention in the past?
Yeah, I mean, I think now we've kind of become a little more conformed to the team that gets hot usually wins. And so I think that even dating back to when we had the one game wild card playoff, you remember the Giants in 2014 for their third championship, they began in the wild card game and then went on to win the World Series. Their third, like I said, third in 6 years. So you have these instances in which teams go from kind of, I mean, so to speak, barely making it to going to the World Series. So this. What's happening here I guess is particularly unusual just in terms of history and in terms of specifically teams just getting swept. When you see like the Orioles get swept and the Dodgers get swept, 200 plus win teams, the Braves go down again to the Phillies, but I feel like the Phillies are more built for the playoffs as opposed to, well, I wouldn't say as opposed to the Braves, they have won the World Series recently. I would like to maybe see there be a change in like from the wild card series to the division series in terms of games and time off. And so, but that's a whole other story. But this is not, I'm not like crying for like the whole postseason to get revamped, or this is some kind of crime and we should now go back to just whoever wins the league. It should be like 1953 and that those two teams should meet in the World Series. And that's the way it should be. Because we've had times, I mean, we had 1987, the Twins had won 85 games. They had the least amount of wins of the four postseason teams. They win the World Series and over the Cardinals. I wasn't, you know, I was a few months old, but I don't remember there was any cry of like, oh, we need to change this whole postseason. So I think going in, you kind of have the feeling of this for this postseason that it, again, it goes, it's the team that gets hot, and that's what makes it interesting. It may not make it traditionally well where the best team wins, but that's, you know, that doesn't happen in just about, that doesn't happen in every sport. It doesn't happen in football really. And I think teams, if they really, you know, I think teams will learn from things like this. And I don't, but I don't look at it as like some kind of crime against the tradition of baseball. These teams are that are winning, you know, maybe getting squeaking in, so to speak. Are finding the right, you know, they're playing to the parameters of the postseason and they're succeeding.
It could produce some fun things like getting us a World Series for a team that has Gary Sheffield, Bobby Bonilla, Moises Alou, Charles Johnson throwing out Kenny Lofton at second base in a game five of an NLCS. Without the wild card, Marlins wouldn't even be here. Do you think already it returned dividends by year three, just giving us this fun of a Marlins team in the postseason?
Yeah, and I mean, I think it generates interest it generates fan interest maybe from someone like you who may not normally be that interested in baseball, and it like sticks with people and it creates these kind of specific memories. Do you remember when the Marlins, they upset the Braves and then they go on to win it all? It's like, I think, you know, if you were back in, you know, 1993, it would have been Marlins and Giants or something like that. I don't know who had the second most wins in the National League then. Maybe it was like, I don't know, maybe it was the Astros. I don't remember. But and you wouldn't have had all these kind of postseason scenarios or postseason moments. The regular season might mean a little bit more. But also you wouldn't have as many teams competing for the postseason. You'd have more teams just kind of playing out the string, so to speak, at the end of the year. So as much as this allows for variance and teams that maybe don't have as many wins, it does allow for more memories. And again, more fan bases get into at least the end of the season in October.
This has been another episode of Remember That Game. Please rate, review, subscribe, and check out more episodes.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.